This year's Spectrum Conference for Sexual and Interpersonal Violence Prevention, Education, Capacity Building, and Training and Response for Underserved Sexual and Gender Minorities takes place July 9th and 10th in Albany, New York. Among the sessions this year will be 9 on 9, nine higher ed attorneys discussing the past and future of Title IX, an update on the state of HIV/AIDS, a discussion on the successes and remaining challenges of presidents with LGBTQI+, and the first ever national keynote by Charles Craig and Dave Mullins, who tried to purchase a wedding cake from Masterpiece Cake Shop in Colorado, a case that, of course, went to the Supreme Court last year. To tell us more, we welcome SUNY Associate Counsel Joseph Storch and SUNY Director of Sexual and Interpersonal Violence Prevention Elizabeth Brady. A great pleasure to have you both here. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having us.
Very nice to have you on the program. You were, I believe, here last year talking about this, and here again to talk to us about this year's conference. So give us a sense of what you learned last year and how it helped put this one together.
Sure. Well, I think we put on the first Spectrum not knowing how many people would come. Would we have 50? Would we have 500?
Yeah.
And we ended up having 620 people here in Albany, New York. They came from as far as Hawaii. They came from 25 states. And we saw that there's a real need. There's a lot of conferences in higher education that have a track or a session or two on the specific needs and challenges when helping victims and survivors who are members of the LGBTQI+ community. And we said, well, let's just do an entire conference on that. And it showed us that there is a need. And this year, registration is running two and a half times ahead of where it was last year. We learned some technical lessons, but overall, people really got a lot out of it from the people who had the most experience. But especially, we were pleased by the people who had the least experience, who came in and said, I didn't even know this was a thing. Somebody made me go to this. My department chair made me go. And these are the changes I'm going to make this year. Very, very special.
They didn't know what was a thing.
That they didn't know that there are a heightened risk of violence for members of the LGBTQI community. And they didn't know that little things that we could do can actually make people feel more welcome when they are a victim or survivor. So little changes we can make in approaches of speech and how we set up a room and then much more complex things can make it more welcoming so that people can return to the path to healing.
So, Elizabeth, this is your job. So what are some of those little things that can be done that we can pass along that you'll be passing along at the conference?
Yeah, so some of the things that we'll be talking about at the conference are things like utilizing more inclusive language. Sometimes we can use language that is harmful without even recognizing it. For example, if you say, men and women, please rise, or yeah, you know, men and women, please welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen, 100%. Right. It can be gendering to the audience when if someone is gender non-binary, that doesn't necessarily speak to them. So there is sort of going to be a focal point of the conference, as well as a bunch of other really helpful tips and tricks. It's important to us that we're going beyond just Pride Month in our efforts to create a more inclusive environment for our students. So that's why this year the conference is going to be in July as compared to June, which is sort of part of SUNY's greater work of creating a more inclusive environment.
By the number that you had last year, you would think that a great number of those people are people who are well-intentioned, who want to do the right thing and are just looking for some direction in doing that. Is that safe to say?
I think it is. I think there are a tremendous number of people of goodwill who just need the tools in order to do the kind of good work that they want to do. And we had people, we had law enforcement, we had rape crisis counselors, domestic violence shelter staff, we had faculty and staff, presidents, you name it. And they all got together, physicians, lawyers, and they were able to really raise the bar across the board. So it is almost all people of goodwill who just need more tools in order to do a better job.
So when it comes to preventing and responding to violence against LGBTQI+ students, what do we know about the numbers of students who are impacted by that on SUNY campuses across the state?
So we know that about 1 in 2 folks who identify as transgender or gender non-binary will experience an incident of sexual assault within their lifetime. That number is insane, which is really why it was
That's half.
Yeah. So if you meet someone, there's an equal chance that they have been sexually assaulted as that they haven't been sexually assaulted.
And this is different from, I mean, this is sexual assault. This is different than bullying or what we would consider to be, crimes that would not, not felonies.
Those numbers are higher.
Yes, those numbers are higher.
Or even higher. Yeah, for our transgender community members, it's hard to find somebody who hasn't been subject to bullying, whether it was in junior high school, in high school. It's hard to find somebody who hasn't been subject to harassment. And about half of them over their lifetime will be subject to assault. Incredible numbers.
So they're coming to you, meaning they're coming to the universities having already experienced this in many cases.
In many cases, yes. And further compounding the issue is something about 20% of those who have experienced a sexual assault experienced it in either a healthcare or shelter setting, which when you're sort of trying to interpret how to best set up homeless shelters or healthcare provider office settings, that's something that we really want to be careful with. And that's something that will be covered at the conference as well, is making sure that our spaces are affirming and inclusive.
So in the prevention aspect of this, you obviously are looking to prevent anything happening on campus, but also responding and helping those who have already been impacted and affected by some form of abuse.
100%. Most of our, sort of to Joe's point, most of our providers, our service providers, our faculty and staff are all really, really eager and willing to help our students achieve to the best of their abilities. But when there's a lot of trauma to unpack that students are coming to our campuses with, we want to make sure that we're addressing these students appropriately and that when we speak to them, we're using proper pronouns and that we're making a really comfortable environment for them to heal. So 100%, a lot of students are coming to our campuses with a lot of trauma.
Are we getting better in the sense that, don't take offense to this word, but kids, the kids who come to college are perhaps more open-minded than adults are?
I think our nation is a bit of an Escher drawing. In some ways, we're going up, while in other ways, we're going down or backwards.
Yeah.
We are certainly seeing in parts of the country things becoming more dangerous for members of the LGBTQI+ community. On our campuses, in our high schools, we're seeing far more acceptance in states like New York. We are seeing far more acceptance and far more growth and gain for members of that community, but it is not equal across the country.
Certainly not. And does that, and I hate to put it in these terms, but does that make the university system, the state university system, in some way that students in these populations are looking for places where they feel that these issues are being addressed and where they feel safe and where they are respected to the fullest?
I hope they look to us. I hope they look to us as that place in society where they are going to be respected and where they're going to be accepted. Our chancellor, Dr. Johnson, sets a really strong tone from the top. SUNY's entire mission was about providing access back from 60 almost 70 years ago, and that's been the mission. So I hope that they look to us, and I hope that they take the lessons that they learn on campus and bring that with them into society as they take jobs and as they become teachers and business people and the like, and use those lessons society-wide.
Okay, so just because I know people are asking, because I've already seen one email that's come through on this, and it's separated even in your literature, LGBTQ, LGBTQI+, the difference being?
So lesbian, bisexual, gay, transgender, queer or questioning, and
yes,
intersex. And plus covers a range of other folks who don't fit clearly or neatly into one of those letters. And we want folks to know that they're part of the equation as well.
Isn't that the problem, though, that we have to fit into one of those letters or those into a category? I mean, isn't that what this is all about ultimately?
Yeah, I think what we're about is saying whichever letter you fit into, you are part of our fabric in New York and America, and we are going to do whatever we can to train both those inside and outside the community. This is not a conference aimed only at educating LGBTQI people. It's
educating
everyone.
Yes, and outside, and that a lot of that, I would assume, comes to education, and education so people understand what all of that means, and that, again, well-intentioned, that they want to do the right thing.
Yeah, and I think that sort of, rather than trying to get folks into a box or into a specific category, it's more so about undoing the erasure that has happened to a lot of these individuals. You know, a lot of the times we say LGBT, and you hear feedback that the B is a lot of times erased, so the bisexual individuals. And then asexuality is something that we're also going to be focusing on quite a bit at the conference, because it's something that we receive feedback. There's a lot of erasure of that community. So we are not here to categorize but more so to make sure that folks are represented and that we're bringing the best content possible to ensure that those who are in attendance are able to learn as much as possible.
Okay, so in our remaining moments, let's talk about the content. Let's talk about what's going to be going on at the conference and how it rolls out over the 2 days.
Sure. One of the, basically the only opportunity to see Charlie Craig and David Mullins, to hear their important story of trying to buy a cake from Masterpiece Cake Shop, a case that went all the way to the Supreme Court, is at the SUNY Spectrum Conference, July 9th and 10th in Albany. One of the only opportunities to hear Cecilia Gentile, who was Ms. Orlando on Pose on FX and is an incredible activist and speaker, is at the Spectrum Conference. To hear our chancellor and our presidents, to hear about the 2030 challenge in HIV-STI, and what that is going to look like and what we're going to need to do to get there. And for the Title IX session, the 9-on-9, we've brought the leading experts in Title IX from across the country, from here to California and a number of places in between, to really speak to it. How does Title IX cover members of the LGBTQI community? What is going on in the current administrative work in D.C., what we should expect in the next few years? And that is a session that you could only hear at SUNY Spectrum. And then 48 concurrent sessions. We're rolling 8 sessions at a time in 6 blocks, hour and 15-minute sessions, incredible depth of content, lots of choices.
We'll also be having a film screening and moderated discussion. Zeke Thomas, who is a DJ and activist, he's the son of Isaiah Thomas, the NBA superstar, who is a sexual assault survivor himself, was executive producer of the documentary Untold Story. He will be with us on the evening of July 8th, right the night before the conference starts. And any conference attendee can join us and join him to view the screening and have a conversation with him.
Oh, the Attorney General will be with us, Tish James. And thanks to a grant from our partners, the New York State Office of Victim Services, we were able to reduce the cost of attending the conference to one of the lowest costs for a conference in the country, $195 registration fee. And that covers all the content, the materials, breakfast and lunch. We wanted this to be accessible to everybody out there, business owners, school teachers, law enforcement, rape crisis folks, campus, non-campus, K-12. We want this to be a place where people can get answers, get help, and try to do a better job.
The amount of conferences and of panels that you have is really, as you said, 8 at a time, and so it's a great number and a lot of things that are going on. There's one here called Ending the Rape Kit Backlog. Tell me a little bit about that because then we get into we not only are we getting into we're getting into a larger issue of overall sexual harassment and violence.
So our colleague from the Joyful Heart Foundation, Ilsa Connect, is going to be coming out to speak to the issue of the rape kit backlog, which is a whole longer segment to kind of be discussed. But also,
which means that the rape kits that have been used, the backlog of finding out who, in some cases, it can take years for that information to be processed. And oftentimes, by then, the statute of limitations has run out.
Or the person is free to reoffend. Many times when they've gone through the backlog and actually cleared the backlog, they found the same DNA over and over and over again. They can then match that with another state and find out that there's been a pattern committed by the same offender. So it is very important.
I was stunned to learn what the backlog is on rape cases in this state, and which obviously leads to the number, but also the fact that it's so difficult to get the number of kits through in a timely fashion.
Right, especially when we're talking about an exam that is incredibly invasive and can potentially be re-traumatizing. Forensic nurses are incredible. They do a wonderful job. They're trained in trauma-informed practices, and they do a really, really great job. But at the end of the day, after someone has been violated and experienced an incredibly traumatic incident, the process of going through a forensic exam can be further traumatizing, and then to know that it's not going to be processed is difficult. So we're going to be talking about that and about the impact on members of the LGBT community and how, if we're able to address it, it may help more victims come forward.
Well, it's the SUNY Spectrum Conference 2019 in partnership with the New York State Office of Victim Services. It's July 9th through 10th. And for people who are interested, it is open to the public, right?
People can go. Absolutely. Yes. SUNY.edu/events/spectrum or just search SUNY Spectrum.
Yep.
And we welcome folks. We already have about 500 people registered, and we know that number will continue to rise, and we welcome folks to come on out. It's an incredible gathering of experts, an incredible gathering of attendees, and it's really the only opportunity in the country, not just in Albany, it's the only opportunity in the country to get this type of content all together.
SUNY.edu/events/spectrum. I will say that we have that link on our website as well. So if you go to WAMC.org/roundtable, you can find it there as well. SUNY.edu/events/spectrum, or as Joe mentioned, just go to SUNY Spectrum and you'll find all the information that you need. My thanks to Joseph Storch and to Elizabeth Brady for your beautiful work and the important work that you're doing in the community. And I so appreciate you being here and sharing it with us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Have a good conference. Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.